And I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see underlying everything.
That's right. And we've got all kinds of reality today.
Oh, and more than two friends.
Like a more than a 50% bonus in the reality department.
Yep.
We've got three people with us.
No, it's really crowded in here.
Yes. Today is a show. It's a little bit different from our normal shows. This is a topic show. And the topic is heroines, past and present. Mm-hmm. Remember, I said heroines with an S, not heroin.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
All right. So who's with us, Julie?
So we have guests. The first one is the person who raised the question of past and present heroines, Rose Davis.
Yay. Hello, Rose.
Say hello.
I didn't say hi. I said hi.
Julie and Rose are related somehow. I'm not sure how.
Yes. My daughter, Rose.
All right.
From L.A.
You bet.
Representing the West Coast.
Very poorly.
You know, this is the first podcast I think I've ever done where every mainland time zone is represented.
Oh, of the U.S.? Yep. You're right. Mm. Because then next we have you and Joseph Susenka.
Yeah.
Hello, did I say Joseph? Your name right, Joseph?
That's the right way to say it.
Okay. Hello. Right.
Hello.
And welcome. And then you are in the central time zone, Julie. And
I am
representing the entire East Coast.
That's right.
Is
bad
Heather
clean
Ordover.
Up on the East Coast.
Fantastic. Well,
Heather
welcome,
Ordover.
Everybody. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah, this podcast, the idea of this podcast came up after our Jane Eyre podcast, and I can't remember what number that was.
30, something like that.
Yeah, let me look it up here. 30, yep, 30 it is. So at the very end of that, we started to talk about The Hunger Games, because The Hunger Games had just come out, and we were talking about Katniss, and we compared her a little bit to Jane Eyre. And then after that, we've started to get some comments about that, right, Julie?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and partly because Rose and I had a conversation at the same time. Rose has read all the books and seen the movie, of course, and she had some very definite comments about heroines like Jane Eyre and heroines like Katniss. Mm. And we got a lot of comments, and then you and I kept bringing it up every time a heroine came up.
Right, because Brave came out.
Yes.
Disney Pixar's Brave. And I said, hey, that was pretty good for a Disney princess movie.
And then I saw it and was like, that was no Disney princess movie, sir. Sir?
And then I promptly sent you a photo of Brave. I forget what the character's name is. At Disney.
Merida.
Yeah, that's her. Merida on with the other princesses in the Magic Kingdom. So how could it not be a princess movie?
And I said, I don't care what they're doing to sell memorabilia. That has nothing to do with her character in the movie. So
all
then
right.
We said, we better get other people talking about
that's
this.
That's right.
So.
That's right. And here we are. And here we
yes.
are.
Yes. So
yeah,
Rose,
I think you saw the Princess and the Frog there too. And she wasn't a princess. She owned a restaurant.
Uh-huh.
So.
Ooh.
That's true. That's true.
Pretty as a princess, perhaps, in the Disney universe.
Yeah.
Said the
yeah.
East Coast.
That's interesting. Recently, there's the Princess in Rapunzel also, who's not quite lined up with either of those camps. So she's an interesting case study as well.
Yeah, she
mm-hmm.
is.
Interested.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, Rose, do you want to give us the basic premise that kind of brought us together to talk about heroines? What your email said?
Yeah. So I have observed through reading several YA novels that the female protagonists tend to have like some certain traits that are all very similar and all kind of designed to represent modern women to teenage girls. And it tends to be this mix of like modesty that isn't really justified, and kind of a rejection of traditional femininity. They don't wear makeup. They feel uncomfortable wearing dresses. They're not very interested in romance. They're not like, they don't have their eyes set on a boyfriend. But they also, and they tend to underestimate their own abilities. So they'll never believe they're good leaders or that they're smart or that they're beautiful. But they always are because they're the heroines. So they
have to be.
Exactly. But really what makes these women strong, I guess, is that they are physically strong. So they have some sort of physical activity that they're good at. They can hunt, they can fight, they can survive in harsh conditions. But that is a trait that makes them much more masculine. I mean, it's a trait that's much more commonly associated with masculine heroes. And without that trait, we're left with a heroine like Bella Swan, who is
no heroine at all.
Yeah, I think universally declared to be a very weak heroine
until the fourth book.
So the question is that is the modern heroine defined by her emulation of masculine traits versus former, like, heroines in classic literature, which were defined in their own feminine, like, the more stereotypically feminine traits of a domestic goddess, where they would stay at home, they would cook and clean and take care of a man, and getting married was something that they did. So has the modern heroine strayed from that, and is that necessarily a good thing? Does that make them a better heroine?
Yeah, because the point being that there are good domestic goddesses, as you put them. So now that's twice, Joseph. So, you know, it's right. Going good.
We're set.
we can feel good about this now.
Yeah, because Jane Eyre, super strong person, while still embodying all those traits that you talk about, those are her goals. And also being actually written in a very Christian style. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, oh, Mr. Rochester, I do not think I'll run away with you because that is weak. You know, so being.
And what she has is a strength of conviction, mm-hmm. which actually a lot of YA heroines lack because they haven't come
found
into
that sense
of their
yet.
Own yet.
Yeah.
So where, you know, can we agree that, like, heroines such as, what would you call Cinderella a heroine?
I mean, she would definitely be a domestic goddess, but okay. She wouldn't be a strong one either.
No, she's no Jane Eyre.
Well, but see, that's, I think this is where it becomes a really interesting question that you raise, Rose, and it comes down to whether we're talking about the Disneyfication of heroines, which I posit is the purposeful weakening of female characters in order to, quote unquote, make them palatable, which I don't think was necessary in the first place, except that it started in a post-war pillow talk Doris Day Rock Hudson environment, or whether you're looking at the original female heroines who I would think, in the ones that are coming to my mind, including the original Cinderella, that puts them a whole lot closer to Jane Eyre, where there's this strength of character, this firmness to their character that comes from the conviction that they know who they are, and who they are may be centered in the home, but I think Julie will agree with me. You can't say that raising children, being maternal, running a household is a sign of weakness on any level. It takes an amazing amount of strength and fortitude to keep going and not, you know, throw a skillet at your kids some days.
And being a good being a good wife in terms of being good, meaning being an equal partner to your husband.
Exactly.
Complimenting your husband and
working as a team.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm going to jump in here for a second, if I might. There's seems to me that there's a kind of using that term Disneyfication again. When I think about the kind of the original fairy tale version of Cinderella compared to the Disney version of Cinderella, it does seem to me that there's one of those things that Rose talked about with domestic goddesses. It seems to me that the Disney version of Cinderella is very passive.
Yes.
Much more passive than kind of my impression of Cinderella from the fairy tale. Right? So inside the Disney version, the mice do a lot more than she does. She kind of wanders around looking upset, right? But it seems to me that that is true of the Disney version of that character. Not so much true, it seems to me, of the actual kind of fairy tale version.
And isn't Cinderella the Disneyfied version just Bella Swan and the mice are vampires in Bella's world?
Oh my goodness.
Holy cow. I hadn't thought of it that way.
But I'm thinking of the original version. Of course, you know, I didn't go back to Grimm or wherever it came from, the Grimm brothers, but I know Disney kind of dumbed it down a little, but it was pretty much what they said, except for the sisters dancing in the red hot shoes, and she didn't stop that or anything.
Yeah, I think there's still a certain amount of Cinderella is not, you know, her fairy godmother gets her into the castle, and then the prince comes searching for her. She still isn't a very active character, unless it's dramatically different than what I'm remembering.
Well, no, it's true. I don't think she's dramatically different, but she seems to have the Disney character seems to be completely passive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of these, it seems to me a lot, you know, look at Jane Eyre and say, gee, she's pretty passive, but there are aspects to her that are not at all passive, right? So once you have some of that at all, it really seems to me change the dynamic of her character a lot. And even though I think it's fair to say that the Cinderella in the fairy tale is more passive, she didn't come across the same way to me as the Disney version, who seems to be almost nothing. Mm-hmm. She's almost, she's a piece that gets moved around almost more than anything else. And that's why it seems to me, when I remember the cartoon, it's all the other characters that are much more memorable to me. The mice are really memorable. The cat, the fairy godmother, of course, the stepmother, who's one of the scariest Disney villains. They're all so much more realized, and I think it's connected to that passiveness of the heroine herself, which seems to me to be kind of a. In some ways, it's an earlier version, but it's on the other side. But it seems to be a real mischaracterization of the heroine role as well. It seems to me, just on the other side.
Exactly, and I don't actually think that it was even supposed to be a heroine story as much as a if you can survive the oppression, you will win in the end kind of story. It may be bad today, but there's a better day coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually really interesting that you guys brought up Cinderella, because one of the people I wanted to talk about was Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because there have been two movies made recently about Snow White, Mirror Mirror and Snow White and the Huntsman, that portray, that basically dramatically change the story in both instances by giving her. In Mirror Mirror, she goes into the forest and the dwarves teach her to be a thief, basically, which includes swordplay. Mm-hmm. So she learns how to fight, and she at one point does duel the prince in the forest. And despite only having one montage, nearly bests him in several occasions.
After just one montage?
Montage.
I know, and I assume the prince had at least, like, several montages in a previous movie. And then Snow White and the Huntsman, she leads an army, Joan of Arc style, to the witch's castle. And in both cases, the way that they're making the heroine strong is by dramatically changing the original story and making her physically strong.
Which is also the case in that Once Upon a Time series. Now, I haven't watched any of the second season, but it was really interesting in the first season when they would show the flashbacks of the original Snow White. She was a very active, physical hunter. Mm-hmm. And the really interesting thing, though, is to make her passive because she'd lost her memory in current day, wherever it was in Massachusetts. She was much more of the Jane Eyre type heroine in that she knew what was going on, but she was always the sweet, nice person, but she was trying to actively change things within that personality, if I'm correct. So that was portrayed as being weak because she'd lost her memory and she didn't know who she was. She couldn't be strong.
She lost that strength of conviction that she has when she's Snow in the old day.
She needed her daughter, who was much more active and a bounty hunter and tough and super skinny and everything, to help her do it. Yeah.
She has awesome boots.
Oh.
Forgive my ignorance on this, but is there source material for the Snow White, the Disney movie? Was that taken from a legend of some type?
It was the Grimm fairy tale.
It was a Grimm fairy tale called Snow White?
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. And not only that, but there's like, it turns out that there were many, many variations, but they had, it looks like really sincerely different thematic punches to all of the different versions. The Grimm story is referred to Snow White and should not be confused with the story of Snow White and Rose Red, which was another tale that was collected by the Brothers Grimm. And so there are pages and pages.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So when would you think that the whole modern YA heroine, where did that spring up? You know, you mentioned Jane Eyre, and Jane Eyre is pretty old, but in film, is Buffy the source?
She's probably definitely toward the beginning, although Buffy the Vampire Slayer actually has moral convictions as well, which makes her stronger than most YA heroines.
She really just wants to be a cheerleader.
In the beginning, but as she goes on, she does have moral convictions where she knows that she needs to do this and she has a reason why. Yeah. And she does believe those convictions.
And I think a lot of that has to do with Joss Whedon. I think he has such an interesting... I hesitate to say it, but I can't help saying it anyway. An old-fashioned take on morality. Because all of his stuff really comes down to morality tales. Whether it's Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog or Buffy or the Avengers, you know, whatever it is that he seems to touch, I feel very comfortable having my kids take a look at it because there's always something worth discussing.
Mm-hmm. Because he understands story.
Yeah.
Story is the key. And if you're going to really be true to what speaks to people in story, it goes back to that kind of old-fashioned thing, I would say, which is kind of one of the problems with Rose didn't really have the passion in her voice that she did when she was first speaking to me on the heroin thing. There was a definite edge. Yeah, especially talking about Katniss and Bella.
The problem is that Katniss is physically strong and she can shoot a bow and she can survive in the wilderness, but she has zero convictions. She kind of gets some convictions when PETA explains what's going on. And PETA himself is much more feminine than Katniss is, not in like...
And he has convictions.
Yes, and he has convictions and he can see what's going on around him and he thinks much more deeply about the world around him. But when PETA's gone and she's left by herself, she returns to having zero convictions. She's in the middle of a revolution and her biggest concern is which guy she should end up with and how sad she is about District 12.
Yeah. Is that really her biggest conviction, though? Because I would say it's her sister. That's her main concern. And it's spoiler alert, that when her sister is killed by the guy who she thinks she's going to wind up with, that's when she suddenly finds her moral compass. I think the way that her character was drawn, it's unfair to expect her to have a moral compass or kind of an inner core. Until that moment, she was too young when her father died. Her mom's a wreck. She doesn't have any guidance at all. PETA has a family. It's flawed, but it's a family. But it isn't until that moment when Prim is gone that she turns and goes, wait a minute, you can't do that.
But I think her moment to get a moral compass was when she was in the first Hunger Games, which was a traumatic event. It showed her what the Capitol was like, what these people were like, how horrible this was. That was her moment to get convictions. And she almost got them at the end of the first book. And then the second book happened and it all disappeared. And I don't think Primrose is present enough to take the place of her convictions.
I think that's giving an awful lot of credit to a 15-year-old in a life-threatening situation.
Well, okay, wait. We're talking about a book.
Yeah.
You know, so the writing of the book should have some carrying forward of one from one book to the next. And to me, she took the second book and went completely backwards, and so much so that despite the super cool way the games was set up in the second book, which made me cry because it was so wasted, you know, Katniss suddenly became so much stupider than she was in the first book even that I couldn't go on to the third book. I realize, Scott, Heather, possibly Joseph, I'm you know, not on solid ground here, but I'm just saying.
Actually, I'm one of the 2.5 to 3 people in the world that have not read Hunger Games, so.
Well, Scott and Heather will tell you you should hurry up and read them, and I will tell you that's okay. First book's pretty good.
You know, first book's
great.
Yeah.
Well, and what defines her character is her amoral sense of self-preservation and preserving her family as well. But she, in the second book, she hardly even has to do that. So I kind of never know what she stands for, you know? And especially as a heroine who's supposed to be pulling an entire trilogy forward, her lack of conviction, she just kind of devolves into this whiny teenage girl who's more interested in a love triangle than the war that's going on around her that she's supposed to be the mascot of. She just can't make up her mind.
You know, it's interesting that that's your memory of it. I'm going to have to go back and reread it again, because my memory was that I was the one who wanted to see what the heck was going to happen with the love triangle, and that she was consistently ignoring it, and it was driving me crazy.
Really?
Yes. Wow. I have to go back and reread it.
Because the second book, she spent all her time going, oh, but this one's so good looking. Oh, but he's so nice. Oh, but he's so good looking. Oh, but he's so nice.
I have to go back and read it again.
This
is not talking me into reading the books, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, the first one's great.
The first one actually is good. But I was going to say, Hannah, the daughter who's not on here, brought up an interesting comment when I was kind of saying, can you think of any heroines who are modern, who are more old school, you know? And she brought up an interesting fact that Jennifer Lawrence, who played Katniss in The Hunger Games before that, and I don't know who's seen this movie, I haven't, played a great character in Winter's Bone.
Oh, yeah, that was an extraordinary movie, I thought.
And she wasn't sure if that fulfilled what we were talking about, but she said, you know, this is somebody who didn't turn into someone else. She didn't become more masculine because it was the thing to be. She was kind of taking the parent's place, and because she was doing what had to be done. Now, I don't know how she fits into this conversation. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
I'm fully convinced that that movie is why Jennifer Lawrence got Hunger Games.
Yeah, there is certainly some similarities between the two characters. Katniss was the parent in Hunger Games, and I completely forgot what her character's name was in Winter's Bone. But her parents were absent there too, and she was taking care of two kids, I think.
Two or three, and it was and her mother taking care of the mother too.
Right, and it was rough movie.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Good, very good though.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when we're talking about these kind of the kind of heroine as action hero. I think we could go back further than Buffy. When I was thinking about, or if you kind of look at what people have said about these things, kind of in generally, one of the first characters that they bring up is Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor in the Terminator movies.
Ripley
or Ellen Ripley, right in the Alien movies.
Mm-hmm. In the second Alien movie, especially.
Right, and that, you know, interesting, Rose, that's the one that I really...
It was written as a man, so I don't know if that really counts.
No,
sorry,
go ahead, Rose. Say that again, Rose.
Oh, because in the first Alien movie, her part was originally written as a man, so I don't know if it could really count as a heroine when it's an androgynous.
Yeah, well, certainly in Aliens, the sequel... it's for her.
Yeah,
no question.
Yeah,
right. The reason that I thought that the aliens idea is such an interesting example is, for me, the time when she became most interesting to me is towards the end of Aliens, when she really starts to display some maternal characteristics, right? Because there's that little girl,
right?
I think that's kind of a striking contrast, particularly from, as Rose said, since she's not even necessarily meant to be a woman inside Alien, that there's a way in which inside Aliens she starts to get back in some ways away from trying to outman the men, getting back to something which is a little more, again, kind of using the Joss Whedon word, a little more traditional. In some ways, she starts to become more of an interesting character to me anyway when that little girl shows up and she starts to react with her.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the director's cut?
Of Aliens?
Not yet, of Aliens.
I have not, no.
It's not very different. It's just got a few scenes extra. But one of the scenes that's in there that, in fact, I waited to buy it until that came out, actually, because I read an interview with her where she said they had to cut it for time, not a lot. But one of the early scenes is when they're showing her the picture of her daughter who died while she was gone. And she's looking at it going, I said I'd be back for her, you know, 11th birthday or whichever birthday it was. And she just sits there for a minute and then she goes on. So that sets up everything. You see, as a mother, as a woman, she regrets that. And she is not going to leave this little girl behind. And when she sees that little girl, this is her chance to be who she should have been.
Right.
And so when I read that and then I got to see the scene, I was like, they were wrong to cut that one, at least, because that really did what you're talking about, Joseph. It gave the reason for her to become the mother, because then it's a movie. I'm sorry, because it's one of my favorites. It's about mothers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which mother's going to win?
Right.
Right.
You know? And I think Terminator 2 has the same thing with Sarah Connor.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's, her motherhood is what makes her strong and what makes her interesting.
Yeah. Yes. Not to mention biceps.
Sarah Connor.
Which is why I liked Ripley. She didn't have to have the biceps. That was for Vasquez.
And she was
strapped on the guns and went down there and got her.
But you have to admit that every woman should have an opportunity in their life to be able to take a gun like Sarah Connor does and do the with the hair in the face and the biceps ripped,
well,
and then go and put on a Matrix coat with a wind blowing on her, and then everything's fine. Then you can do anything after that. You can go and make a pudding.
That's the modern thing. That's what everyone wants to see, right? That's Kill Bill. That's Katniss. That's Hannah in that movie, which should have been better and wasn't.
Yes.
That's, you know, all these people. Because it's not enough to be Elizabeth Bennet or Jo in Little Women or Jane Eyre. We don't want that anymore, do we?
Well,
or is it? But I get it, Heather. I like it too. But I'm just saying.
I agree.
That's the big question, right?
But this is a comment that someone made on the Wuthering Heights blog for over at Craftlit, or on the Wuthering Heights thing, which I know you saw, Julie, was when you look at Kathy and Heathcliff, Kathy and Heathcliff only take up the first half of the book. There's a whole other half to the book that's the what happens after Kathy and Heathcliff. Mm-hmm. And one of the women who was commenting on the notes said that she's a licensed social worker and that these characters, especially Kathy, are borderline personalities, damaged, broken people. And one of the other people came on and said, you know, it's interesting because actually I think that's what most books that are interesting, that have these quote unquote interesting, compelling characters, these almost Byronic characters, what we're watching is these intensely dramatic, broken people who we are fascinated watching them try and go through life. And I think that's part of where these characters are coming from, because Lucy Manette is not very interesting. Madame Defarge is quite interesting.
Well, that's very true. But you know, of course, neither of them is actually the heroine.
No, so, but I'm just going,
you know, I know what you're saying.
Kathy is more interesting than young Kathy.
But isn't that what defined the whole Byronic thing was?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as I can tell, that's what the definition of Byronic is.
Yeah.
I've read about his life.
You don't want to bring her
because
fear.
You've gone through so much stuff.
Yes. Don't go away with Byron and don't let your kids bring him home. Oh, my gosh.
Byron himself was, you know.
Yeah.
Damaged.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, then look, it's, there is some stuff that's fairly modern that, for one thing, okay, some of it is just that we relate to people who we understand more. I mean, we can look at, you know, Ripley and Sarah Connor and Buffy and whoever and go, oh, but, you know, look at, Spirited Away. Uh-huh. What's her name? I can't remember it now. Even I'm thinking, you know, of course, Miranda in Brave. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or even, okay, I'm just going to say it because I love this show. And if people aren't watching it, they should be. The Mindy Project.
Love it.
Oh, she's yes. So funny.
If you have not watched it, you're missing something.
This is Mindy Kaling from Office. Yeah,
she was in The Office.
Okay, I better check it out.
Yeah, she's doing a Tina Fey kind of thing of this is her show and the person's named Mindy and she's an OBGYN and her mother was an OBGYN. So there's a lot of that kind of thing going on, but it's so smart and so real and hilarious. But the thing is that she would like her life to be like a romantic comedy. So every time something is going to go that way, she's going to try for it to go that way. Well, that's how we would all like our lives to be, like a romantic comedy. Well, okay, girls would all like their lives to be that way.
I'll pass. Yeah, I'll pass.
Yeah, you guys, you're going more for the, I don't know, Taken, which don't ever watch it.
It's like okay. Jerry Seinfeld said, you know, superheroes are options for males. Those aren't fantasies. Right. Those are options.
Right. You want to be Batman or Superman or...
I mostly want to be Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, see, you're my guy.
Oh. Well, see, that's the equivalent of the Jane Eyre type heroine. The good guy.
Yeah. But not an NGB. That's but, a nice, you know, a nice guy.
But, you know, I don't know. I'm just looking at all these other heroines. Or the studio, is it Ghibli? Is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That did Spirited Away and all that. Their heroines aren't like these people, Buffy.
Yeah, they're very strong internally. They have a lot of force of conviction, and they typically are children, but they're striving for something, for goals that are, I guess, more noble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to be able to kill a man at 30 paces with a gun. They're getting it through other ways.
But it seems to me in a lot of ways what happens with the kind of the action heroine is, again, you kind of have this dichotomy set up of either being strong, usually physically, mm-hmm. or passive.
Mm-hmm.
And those things seem, it seems to me there are people that are one of those two things, but there's a lot of stuff in the middle. Yes. And a lot of the heroines, kind of movie heroines that I think of that I really like, they tend to be really feisty, right? They don't start shooting people, but they're not sitting. So like Hildy from His Girl Friday I can't remember, is her name Saunders or Clarissa, her name from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, or those kinds of movies where there's nothing passive about those women. No. Right? They do fall kind of in Rose's ranking a little more towards the domestic goddess side, but they're certainly not passive. And so I think in especially in modern kind of action heroine situation where it's almost as though it's set up as either you have to be ready to have the biceps and the shotguns and start killing people, or you're going to be passive. And there's nowhere in the middle.
There's no room for Benny sidekick anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And that seems odd to me. I mean, it seems to me like we're being forced to make a choice, which is really not necessary.
Well, especially when you think about this is all YA, so this is, you know, young women
mm-hmm.
who
mm-hmm.
this is. You know, and there's nothing wrong with this fun. That's the fantasy part, right? You know, but there's nobody who's real either. Who's still, I guess, you know, they're spirited away. I suppose Belle in Beauty and the Beast.
She was the first brainy one that I can remember.
Yeah. And Brave, which Brave mm-hmm. was so polarizing. Women either thought that was a great heroine or that Pixar copped out.
I still
now,
can't.
Now, why do they think she copped out?
She gave in to her mother, you know, she didn't, she wasn't, you know, the really feisty in your face, I'm going to get my way all the way or nothing kind of thing.
Well, to be fair, it was a movie for children, and I'm not sure children should be taught that they are right and their mother is always wrong.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah, I'm just saying, that's what I was hearing. Some women critics were like so disappointed.
I heard that too, and I was shocked because it's like, right. Wait a minute, she lives in part of a clan.
Right.
If she isolates herself any further than she already has, she will die. It's eventually she's going to have to get married. There really aren't that many options.
That's what I thought was really interesting in that movie. I mean, I had that conversation as well with people that thought that Mary Dead just kind of fell into the modern Disney princess genre where the father's an idiot, the mom's either unpleasant or not around, and the girl is kind of strangely modern in an old setting, right? But I thought that I was really struck by the section where they're talking about the table, right? The way that the brothers were the legs of the table.
Mm-hmm.
And once you took one of them away, that's what caused the entire situation, right? Mm-hmm. And so what happens with Merida is, again, she's super feisty. She wants what she wants. She and her mother are constantly butting heads. But by the end, what she realizes is that she is one of the legs of the table, right? And she seems to me, she decides to embrace that in a way, which I thought really goes against the much more kind of modern heroine feel. Mm-hmm. She doesn't get everything that she wants at the beginning, but the reason is because by the end she doesn't want it. She recognizes that it's insufficient. Right.
Yeah.
It's the booth at the end thing, Joseph. Working towards this one goal, you suddenly realize halfway into it that you're not even interested in that anymore, and somebody reminds you of it, and you go, of course, that's what I want. But really, you've suddenly evolved in some direction, and you've changed what you've headed for because you've learned something new.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's very believable.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes Pixar so smart, though, in their filmmaking, is that their lessons are not the fairy tale Disney lessons of if you believe hard enough, you can get whatever you want. It's this is how things actually work. These are truths in the real world that you'll learn eventually.
Yes. And I think that's true for all of their movies. There's always a melancholy underlying everything because on some level, they're helping kids understand what growing up is really going to look like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is why the first 5 minutes of Up is better than most full-length movies.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that beginning.
Well, and even Monsters, Inc., which is probably the largest jumping into fantasy away from like real-life relationships movie to me. Mm-hmm. But at the end, it's still that sad thing of, you know, sometimes you have to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Eventually they say hello again. But, you know, you've got to shut the door.
Yeah.
Time to move on.
I really liked Violet from The Incredibles.
Yes.
I mean, she had an incredible arc in that movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good point. She is another modern one who's not kicking people.
Brad Bird.
Love him.
Well, and she was a superhero, and she was so much more realistic and deep than a lot of these YA heroines who are superhero-esque without necessarily the super part of it.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say earlier we talked about Belle a little bit from Twilight and kind of presenting her as the opposite of this. And Heather, you said something happened in one of the books that changed that for her.
Yeah.
Could you mind talking about that?
Well, I think some people thought of it as kind of the jump the shark moment in the fourth book because suddenly she's a vampire and she's tough and she's all that. But knowing Stephanie Meyer's background, I was actually waiting to see how she was going to pull out the mama bear thing.
She becomes a vampire?
She becomes a vampire to save her life.
Okay.
And so it's not by choice, even though she wanted to. Of course. You know, it's something that just had to happen. Edward didn't have to decide. She didn't have to make him.
Right. She's giving birth and she's going to die.
She's giving birth and she's going to die. Okay.
Oh.
And so that saves her life. But it is both that saves her life and becoming a mom saves her life, finds her that core that she doesn't have, because the last part, the last battle is the, you don't touch my family.
Oh, okay.
And it's her stepping up and finding a spine. And it's like, if it had been the third book instead of the fourth,
it
might have worked better. But I thought dragging it out to a fourth book just to get that mama bear moment was asking a lot.
It's interesting you say that, because I haven't read the fourth book or anything, but I've heard from other people that once she becomes a vampire and her baby is born, she basically leaves her baby with Jacob and just goes off.
Oh,
there. With Edward.
Now,
I know Jacob's like imprinted on her and is going to take good care of her, but it still seems less like a maternal instinct.
Well, she has to, there are two things I think that Stephanie Meyer had to deal with. One, she had to learn how to be a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And since she'd set up this whole, her own mythology, she does have to deal with the fact that on some level, Bella's going to have to learn how to control herself, because she's made such a big deal about how everybody goes out of control when they're new. And there's this war coming. And so she can't go in as a berserker if Stephanie Meyer's going to pull off what she wants to pull off with the whole mama bear thing. So she does go off with Edward, as I recall, to like learn how to hunt deer and other vegetarian vampire things.
Which she was best at, of course.
Right. But I don't remember if the daughter is actually in the final battle. I would hope not.
I remember she grows up super fast until she's like 18 fast. And then stops growing because
it's magic realism.
It's like an H.P. Lovecraft moment.
It is. The fourth book is one big H.P. Lovecraft moment. There's some stuff in it that's really like, wow, I can't believe moms let 11-year-olds read this. But
after I heard about the birth, I was pretty much
horrified.
I was in the library yesterday and overheard there was these two teenage girls and one of their moms. And she said, oh, you're getting Twilight again. And the girl said, yeah, I'm going to reread it. And she goes, oh, all right.
Sorry about that.
Bummer. Yeah.
But I think in ways, Bella is just Katniss without the physical strength.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, I think Katniss has a little bit more going for her. She's clever.
But is she really?
Here we go.
I don't think she is. I think she's fairly unobservant. She doesn't think very deeply about the society she's in, which I understand. She's kind of in a bad place in society. But she doesn't seem to think very much about the society she's in, or even Gale thinks more than she does about it. And it isn't until PETA starts explaining things to her that she all of a sudden understands what's going on. And it's almost as if she adopts PETA's viewpoint on it, because he's just explained his viewpoint.
Well, but doesn't that make perfect sense? If you look at 1984, Winston doesn't question. Winston just sits there and drinks. Katniss goes off and hunts because she's hungry. I mean, I think it's asking an awful lot of a character who's starving to death, slowly, governmentally.
But I don't think that makes her clever or smart, especially when Gale is in the same situation and he is still recognizing what's wrong with society around him.
Sure, but he's older and he's had a whole lot more experience and he's been in the reaping before. And I think the lack of parental involvement in Katniss's life is massive. Her dad died when she was too young. Her mother's lost. Gale seems to still have a more or less functioning family without the father. His mother seems to still have her act together. And PETA has a family, dysfunctional or not. It doesn't surprise me that the first person whose attitudes and ideas you take on would be the first person who's really having an impact on you. And as much as Gale and she have a relationship with hunting, Pete is the first person to actually sit down and try and convince her of something. Gail's just joking with her all the time.
Then I don't know why she went backwards in the second book.
I think because Gail's supposed to be cute. And that's what people wanted. I'm sure she got fan mail.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to do in movie two. You know, if I start seeing Team PETA shirts, they're probably already out there. Team PETA, Team Gail. Because, you know, I didn't get that impression reading book two. But, you know, again, Julie says that's in there. So maybe I should reread it, too. But I didn't spend much time thinking about the triangle in that one.
No. I got a whole lot.
It's been a while since I've read it, though, you know, so.
I just dragged myself through the book eventually.
Yeah, and I fear that movie two is going to, they're going to put Gail. I don't remember Gail being in book two much at all.
At all.
And if they give him a prominent part in number two, that would be kind of what the audience would want. Be interesting to see what they do.
Gail was a coal miner in book two, so he hardly ever saw her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he helped with that family that was running away. Or those people that were running away.
Oh,
once
yeah,
that happened, he pretty much was just doing that in coal mining.
The eunuch, or whatever they were called.
Yeah.
The
people in the cabin.
Yeah.
Saved her from making a decision she maybe didn't want to make right then when they showed up. That was very strategic. I was go ahead.
Guys see Avengers?
Yes.
What did you think of Scarlett Johansson's character in that one?
Yeah, she was definitely the woman of action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think she's very deep. I think she looks very good in skin-tight leather.
But was anybody really deep? Well, I guess Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man, and, oh gosh, she was...
Mark Ruffalo.
I thought the Hulk was the first loved him. Hulk version where I've seen something which was really interesting in him.
I've always
been fascinated by the Hulk, and there was something really interesting in him here. I like that. With Scarlett Johansson's character, I thought the scene where she's talking with Loki, I would have been willing to watch quite a bit more of that.
Yep.
It didn't really go anywhere. That was almost, I mean, that movie had so many characters in it, and they were, you know, they kind of fell down in order of importance according to the way they were listed in the cast. I mean, so by the time you got down to her, there just wasn't a lot of time to be spent on her anyway. She must have just ran around again, as Rose said, in tight leather. But that was it. There wasn't really anything else for her to do.
Yeah. I loved her opening, though. The first scene of her being fake interrogated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when she says, "Yeah, I've got this guy right where I want him."
I know. They're like, "What?"
They're like, "Wait a minute, yeah."
But she's definitely a throwaway character at that point.
Well, I think getting a comic book character is... The comic book character doesn't have all that much to her either. I think they probably gave her more than she would have had otherwise, just because, you know, if you got Scarlett Johansson, you may as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Comic books
give her a good scene.
Are pretty notorious for not having exceptionally deep female characters.
Deep unless you look at their cup size.
Well, that especially...
You guys are just staying quiet on this one. That's very wise, new fellows.
Gosh, I never noticed any of that before.
It's her brain that you love her for, her brain.
Right. I mean, I thought that there could have been an interesting story involving her and Jeremy Renner's Hawkeye that could have been interesting. But again, just felt like there just wasn't time for it.
I'm just going to say, we did not get to see enough of Hawkeye. I think he would have had some very interesting thoughts, and I should have gotten to see a lot more of him.
So I wonder if there's going to be a movie. I remember a moment there where they looked at each other, and he said something about Budapest. You remember it much differently than I do.
Right,
did that come from a movie that I never saw?
Well, I heard that Black Widow and Hawkeye were going to get, they were each going to get their own movie. The problem, though, is that they're not... They're in a superhero movies and they're not really superheroes. They're super spies. So I feel like it would be more like a Mission Impossible movie than a superhero movie.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that'd be neat to see. I'd watch that.
You could see more of Jeremy Renner in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol if you want, right?
Yes, that was fine. I heard people complaining. I was not complaining. That was fine. Although I'm just going to break into the real world here because my husband, Tom, just said, "Did you see this in the Catholic newspaper?" And I went, "What?" And he goes, "Jeremy Renner was in town like a week ago at a local Catholic church. giving a talk, and I went, "What?" And I didn't know. And they said, "Yeah, here's a picture of him with his grandmother."
Oh,
wow. And I'm like, so he goes, his grandmother goes to Elizabeth Ann Seton Church. And I went, oh, now I love him even more. He can give a talk for his grandmother.
He's a good boy and he loves his grandmother.
I knew you'd love that, Heather.
Oh, I knew you'd love it. You know, it's all about how you treat your mother.
That's why we need to see more of those boys in the movies.
I'm telling you what, you know.
In those tight black shirts.
In those tight black shirts. That's just fine.
Well, I have, here's something. I was kind of looking over Rose's email really quickly, and I was noticing that I'm wondering if what we have is just not enough time in this modern era with this sort of a heroine. Because I'm thinking, you know, Penelope from the Odyssey is the ultimate domestic goddess who's clever, manages things, but does it from a woman's vantage point without losing her femininity, but is definitely superior character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, I've mentioned Jane Eyre 1,000 times, but Hester Prynne.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I'm going to mention mine. Eleanor Dashwood.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I have not read Mansfield Park. Rose said Fanny Price, and Dorothea from Middlemarch, which I also haven't read. But I'm thinking, you know, for one thing, there were so many novels written back then, but so we're allowed to kind of cherry pick, look at these wonderful examples, and these are, of course, classic pieces of modern literature. And I actually would maintain, I don't know if anybody's read Bleak House except me.
I am reading it right now.
And I will speak definitively here. I'll just
see mini series.
Huh?
See mini series.
So in my opinion, I was really surprised because Esther Summerton. Anyway, you know, I was looking at her going, oh my gosh, I love this girl. She's a heroine. And I actually was starting to change some of my actual modern manners because of her, because she was so effective at the way she was acting. And I then read that people just put her down for being weak and simpering and just doing what other people told her. And I was like, were you not reading?
She's a great character. Yeah.
I was like, were you not reading what she was thinking? But because she's really smart, but she's just modest and humble. And so I'm wondering if all this modern literature and movies and stuff, we're seeing the really extreme examples.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that's allowed to kind of give us that very clever, deep look from inside somebody's head, because that's not coming to us many places, but we do have, as we've mentioned, Brave and, you know, some other things like that, where things are just kind of popping up here and there.
I think we've lost subtlety a lot of things. You know, if it's not really obvious, if it's not, honestly, Scarlett Johansson in black leather, is it even a woman? Can you tell? Because, I mean, you know, we've lost our ability to gauge that stuff. I was even thinking back to, this is a weird way to go, but for me, formatively as a kid, my vision of a strong woman was Ma Ingalls. Because for God's sake, the woman is building a house alone on a prairie with her husband, three children, and she breaks her ankle or sprains her ankle, and she still builds the house.
Right? Virtual high five. She was on my list, too.
I tell you what, sister, that woman.
And Laura from These Happy Golden Years,
mm-hmm.
having to stay with crazy people while she taught children in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. That's a toughness that we really, I mean, I watch how we all here on the Eastern Seaboard, who I'm speaking for right now, how we all completely lost our cool with that big blackout that we had this year.
Yeah.
I even talked about it on the podcast that we're driving towards West Virginia trying to find power because we know we can't open our refrigerator. And the apartment that we're in is not set up to open the window, so we have no cross ventilation. So suddenly we find that our instincts towards doing the right thing to save yourself are completely hampered by our physical structure. And as we're driving towards West Virginia, I'm on the phone, my husband's driving, I'm on the phone looking for a map, and there's no cell towers up anymore because all the power is out. And so we're in a dead zone. It was the zombie apocalypse. And it was that moment of, oh my gosh, we have really strayed so far from the beaten path if we're relying on all of these things. If we can't see the forest for the trees anymore because we've hampered ourselves so much and pulled so far away from my angles.
No one has a paper map.
That's even. Something that I've thought about now. A lot myself.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, we are so dependent on a lot of things that are really fragile when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they could go away someday.
Like Scarlett Johansson's black leather.
Exactly. I mean, what would we do without that?
Well, everybody hopes for that, I suppose. Certain people, anyway.
Yeah. I still have one burning question. And that is, why is Brave not a princess movie? Define a princess movie, then.
Well, I think a Disney princess movie, Cinderella. Which is what most princess movies are, is when the focus is on the princess getting married to a prince. That tends to be the focal point of the story.
Okay.
And in Brave, it's much more about her relationship with her mother.
Mm-hmm.
She could be almost anyone. She could be at almost any level of the clan having to marry someone that she doesn't want to marry and still have these fights with her mother.
Okay, yeah, I get it still felt like a kind of a Disney princess movie to me. So I guess, you know, marriage was an element in there. She didn't end up marrying anybody at the end. But the love, maybe the love interest was replaced by that relationship with her mom.
Definitely. Well,
it was the catalyst for her everybody suddenly taking a big stand.
But, you know, couldn't you see this as kind of an updating of or a twist on the typical?
I see it more as a subversion of, actually, which is kind of interesting since I think Disney has, to some extent, subverted some of those fairy tales anyway. Certainly, I would make a distinct, I tend to break Disney up into two, maybe three categories. And the princess movies that I think of the most tend to be the ones that are the most recent ones. Would involve people, even though in many cases they're not princesses, like Belle, or Little Mermaid, or...
Right.
Those categories where the girls, it seemed to me, tend to be categorized as rebelling against kind of the society in which they have been placed because they want more for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And there are various things that go along with that, including the fact that the dads are usually idiots, which I don't like a whole lot. But
And the moms are dead.
Right.
Yeah,
but it seems
that were aliveness.
Inside Brave, the message is the exact opposite of that. She doesn't finally escape from kind of her role in society and what she is. She learns why she has it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me. Mm-hmm. So that seems, for me, when I watched Brave, that was much more what I came away with. Plus, I thought there were some really neat scenes between the parents, which kind of were very unusual for those kinds of movies.
Yes.
So it seems much more to me to be about... on the one hand, about the relationship she has with her mother, which you don't see a lot in Disney movies because the mothers are usually not there or dead,
right.
Or killed in the forest. But so there's that real relationship there that you don't usually get to explore in a Disney princess movie. And what happens is, I think many times the problem in the Disney princess movie is that the princess doesn't have a mom around. She just has this dad, and he's usually an idiot and doesn't understand her. Whereas
most
in this
Disney movies, though.
Well, that's true. That's true. But she really learns something about being not a princess, but a woman from this relationship she has with her mom in this movie. And I think she's made a real, I don't know that concession is the word I want, but she really has come to an understanding about herself and the role she plays in this society by the end of the movie. I thought that was really, really in many ways, the opposite of what you usually get from something like Beauty and the Beast.
That's why women were complaining about it. Some women.
I still don't understand.
Well, I don't. No, because those people don't, I think, understand real life. I think. But, you know, it was funny because you were talking about it, Brave, and I was just thinking, what's the other Pixar movie I would feel like it's the most like to me? And this may be completely wrong, but it's what leapt to mind is Finding Nemo. It's not a princess movie. It's not a anything typical movie. But what it is parent and child both have to venture out into places they're not comfortable with to discover who they are and how they belong together as a family. And they all wind up where they started from, but with a better understanding.
Right. And in many ways, it seems to me Finding Nemo is the other side of the record to Brave, or the other way around, right? Because inside Finding Nemo, it's about the father and son.
Father has to learn.
Brave, it's a mother and daughter. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So then it's a hero's journey story, right? Because it's the going into the dark place. It's the finding what you're afraid of finding. Yeah. It's the learning something about yourself, and it's coming home. The difference is in these two hero's journey stories, you're doing it with a parent instead of alone. Which is much safer for a small child if you're going to watch it with, you know, a 5 or 6 year old. And whereas Luke Skywalker has to do it on his own.
Right. Well, it's also that exploration of what happens when you break away. And look, they're always here to come back to. We all learn something, parents and children. We all come back and we changed a little bit and we can be okay together.
And that's a much safer position to work from as a kid.
And it's more real.
Yeah.
I mean, even though it's much more fun when Disney or Pixar shows it than, you know, when it happens for real. But you know, funny, because when you say princess movie, I immediately thought Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, even The Little Mermaid, where it's the whole goal is maybe to get out, but the only way you can get out is with a man. That's Prince the only Generic. Way. You're getting a ticket. And so I guess that's to me why this isn't a princess movie, even though she is a princess, you know, in this movie. She's not acting like a princess. She doesn't have to have a man to get out. Someday she'll get married. But, you know, this is what happens to men, too. I mean, those three boys, they didn't really want to marry her. They were all like, well, no. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess for me, that was they didn't want that woman either.
Yeah.
You know, they just were all supposed to do that. So they did.
Yeah. And I can't think, honestly, of another princess movie where I don't immediately think of who the prince is at the same time. They're just so linked as far as the story goes.
Because that threw me for a loop. I was fully expecting the bear, the old bear that had been around forever. He was going to turn into the handsome guy, and that's who she was going to marry. I was expecting that because that's where the story should have gone if Disney had done it.
Yeah,
that was my thought, too.
I was stunned when they did
that. Then you don't get the table. Then you don't get the table, which is the point of the whole thing.
Right. Thank you for the grounding of the table. I mean, we watched that with a table written on my hand.
It's actually kind of interesting is that a lot of the early Disney princess movies, the princes don't necessarily have names. It's really difficult to think of the name of the prince in Cinderella other than Prince. Prince Charming, but he doesn't have a real name. The early princes don't have names because it's not important what their name is. What's important is that they're a prince and going to marry the girl.
That's why Prince Philip always stood out for me. I always feel differently about Sleeping Beauty Prince than I do about Snow White or Cinderella.
He has a name.
Plus, he actually has to do something.
That's true.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
He has to kill the rabbit.
Well, and also, all the women.
A little rabbit.
Well, he's got a great horse, right? Am I thinking of the right movie? Okay.
And he does have one of the best fight scenes ever in a Disney film. That's a great dragon.
All those active women, all those real women of action are witches. Up to that point. I mean, in those movies.
And in Snow White and the Huntsman, of the two women, the most memorable was the witch, not Snow White.
That's what I heard.
Because the witch was more true to her character than Snow White. Snow White, even though she was leading an army at the end, was still more passive.
Yep. I can tell you that working on Aladdin with the guys who had directed Little Mermaid, I don't know which direction it happened, but I do know that everybody referred to Prince Eric from Little Mermaid as Prince Generic. And I don't know if they named him Eric because of that, or if it just worked that way. But
wow. Oh, that's
And that was the
man. He definitely is very generous.
He is. He's perfectly bland.
Yeah, and one of the things, Rose, again, I'm looking at this email, but you say internal feminine strength.
Yeah.
That's a key for those real traditional female protagonists. And when we're talking about Brave, that's what the two women are both having to deal with. How do they temper that to deal with each other? Where does it define where they belong in their families? You know, and that's something that these modern stories don't show us. It's not an internal feminine strength, or if it's an internal strength, I just don't see it. It's an external. It's on the outside. It's plowed onto what they do, not who they are as much. Well, now, what about the Princess Diaries? See, I think of her as being
the book,
more.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book.
As you should specify the books, because the movies.
I'm sorry. Not the movies. The
very books. And I think that she's much more realistic as a teenage girl who is excusable in the fact that she isn't fully formed in her opinions, because she's in a realistic environment. She's being portrayed as just another teenage girl. But even she feels very strongly about being a vegetarian, about the save the whale, Greenpeace, about, you know, there's things that she has strong opinions about, even if they're not necessarily the most important things. But even that makes her real.
Right.
Right. And they're the things that her society cares about. That's what all these other more traditional heroines care about, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she was in Jane Eyre's time, she would have cared about Christianity, because Helen would have showed her a heck of an example.
Well, and that's what makes someone like Bella so completely odd. I mean, if you've never been in Scottsdale, Bella doesn't make as much sense. If you have been in Scottsdale, Bella actually makes quite a bit of sense.
Really?
I cannot think of a blander. I'm showing my roots. I grew up in Arizona for a good chunk of my teenhood, and then went back for part of my 30-hood. And Scottsdale's pretty. And it's got nice stores and some really awesome golf courses. And I think there's probably some nice restaurants.
Now, were you ever like Bella? I find that hard to imagine, Heather.
No, God, no, because I grew up in Tucson. In Tucson, we had some.
Oh, got it.
We had some salsa in our life.
Okay, then.
No, that explains a lot.
Thank you, Tucson.
I lived in Tucson for 6 years.
Did you really?
I did. I went to college there.
You were at the U.
Yes.
That's the more interesting part of town. Were you down on Fourth Avenue?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah, there I was.
See, Scottsdale does not have a Fourth Avenue.
No, I've been to Scottsdale, too, and you're right.
You know what I mean.
Scottsdale is, you know, where all the chain restaurants live.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not cheesy ones, but like the really nice ones, like Outback. I'm gluten free. I'm not disparaging Outback. They actually have gluten free desserts. I love Outback, but that, you know, it's it makes more sense. Bella makes more sense.
But Bella doesn't seem to care about anything, even where the really nice chain restaurants and golf courses are. She just doesn't care about anything.
But people in Scottsdale would be hard. I'm just going to tick everyone in Arizona off right
now. I'm like, oh, wow.
Mm. I'm going out on a limb here. I have had the most boring conversations of my life in Scottsdale.
Oh, now everybody you know in Scottsdale is going to throw things at you.
Or they're going to say, I know I've been trapped here for 15 years.
Oh,
not either.
You know what? That's it. That's what they'll say.
All the best people say that.
Right. And which means everybody you know.
That's right.
Anybody who ever talked to Heather, that's, you know, she's talking about you guys right now.
It's the people.
Has anyone read The Historian?
No.
Not I. It's on my list as of this week.
I was thinking of that. I was like, I need to get right. I know it's our third time to talk this week. We are very lucky, Scott.
Yes.
I was thinking that I've got to reread that. But it seems to me that she is much more internally driven, too, and not so externally motivated, other than by odd, sinister notes that are left for her on her book when she leaves her spot in the library to go look something up.
Mm. Once you've read, here's the thing, as Jenny from SFF Audio said, once you've read Dracula is when you need to read The Historian.
I guess I need it.
I'm just telling you, which Heather did the most amazing Dracula coverage on Craftlit. I'm just going to say, for anybody who wants to listen, it's amazing.
We had fun.
Cool.
It was great. But The Historian, it's told in several people's voices because her father's telling her a story, and then she's going off and investigating and looking for vampires. But it occurs to me that, yes, she's going and looking and traveling all these great places with these wonderful descriptions, but she's not taking – she's a scholar. She's just being a scholar, doing what it is that she does. She's not being a man about it. I mean, and I don't mean to make it sound that way, because now I sound like I want to live in the 1700s. That's not it. But she's not got a big sword and black leather, and she's, you know, doing ninja stuff to everybody. Or even like some of my favorite books are these people, and because I admit it, Barbara Hambly, some of her older science fiction. Oh, yeah. She wrote somebody who would make, you know, Buffy, Ripley, and Sarah Connor all cry at the same time. Love it. Love those people. So I'm not picking on them that way. I'm just saying that it's funny. She's much more traditionally written, I think. And I'll reread it and find I'm wrong, I guess. But I'm just saying.
I'm adding. And then there's Thursday Next. That's what I'm reading right now. So.
You know, I read the first one of the Air Affair, and I really loved it. And then I tried the next book and went, yeah, that's too much of the same thing for me.
I'm back to the first one, and I'm surprised at how different the last ones are from that first one.
Okay.
She is an interesting character in a clever world. But
Very clever world. And I tried to read the ones, I don't know if everybody else has read any of these, that he wrote some that also were keyed around color instead of story. And I tried one of those and I really couldn't get into it. So I just thought, well, maybe The Air Affair is the only one of his I'll like. I don't know.
It's possible. I liked the nursery crime division books, the Jack Spratt books. Those were fun too, but he's just so clever. But it's interesting that he chose to write a female protagonist in the first book. I found it very odd. And not only a female protagonist, but in the alternate reality, she's been in the Crimean War, which went on for 118 years.
I know. And do y'all know these books we're talking about? What is the author's
name? Jasper Ford.
Ford.
Gotcha. With two Fs. He's British. Yeah. And the whole conceit is that you can go in and out of books. So you could go into Jane Eyre and as a tourist, so to speak, and watch the book happening because it's like an alternate universe. What happens is there's somebody who comes in, and I haven't read it for a while. Is this right, Heather? Somebody comes out of the books and starts causing a lot of trouble. Isn't that it?
I saw that episode of Star Trek. Actually, that's episodes 13, 18, that's 27,
that's 42. Last Action Hero right there.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it is Last Action Hero.
Forrest Iroh.
But with less
sounds interesting.
Movie music and, you know, better hair, but.
Cool.
But nobody screaming, Con!
That was the best 80s hair ever, saying. Certainly the best chest.
You bet.
Yes.
Well, we started some after our podcast on Star Trek II. Seen at least two more podcasts do Star Trek II. And then another,
it's another zeitgeist.
Yeah. And then an article, gosh, I wish I had bookmarked it, but they said Star Trek II was one of the best movies ever, you know, and it wasn't a Star Trek thing that they were, you know, it was just fun.
It was a regular list.
Yeah.
Didn't you? Yeah.
I may have sent it to you. I don't recall if I did, but I was surprised by it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Neat.
But yes, after we talked about it and thought about it a bunch, and I was like, this is so much better of a movie than I really ever realized. Mm. That's good. Then I received a special DVD of it for my birthday.
Yay.
So, I've watched it several times since then.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Aww.
So,
all right.
Anything else about heroines that people thought we didn't cover, or wanted to say, or?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I've just been sitting here looking at my bookshelf, and I think the newest book, like the most recent book that I have with a strong heroine, was Atlas Shrugged from the 50s, I guess. I just don't have any others that are newer than that.
I have a lot with strong heroines, but they're all the kind we're talking about, that, you know, the women of action more. Yeah.
Well, it seems the bookshelves in the science fiction and fantasy section are covered with Buffy-type clones. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of Black Widow outfits, lots of swords, lots of crouching on the covers, ready to jump at something.
That's right.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
We'll even
and
think
the YA shelves seem to be covered with vampire stuff.
Yeah. The agents won't even take vampire stories anymore.
Oh, that's good. What's the next thing going to be?
Oh, it's all psychic stuff.
It's really funny because the CW recently revamped that horrible show from the 80s, Beauty and the Beast, into a new Beauty and the Beast. And it's basically a vampire story, except instead of a vampire, he's a werewolf-esque Hulk beast. But I feel
like me when
it's basically the same. Oh, it's horrible because it's the CW. I don't mean to offend
CW.
It's basically the same thing where it's the vampire who, with a dark and brooding past, who can't with this girl because he could possibly kill her. Which is, of course, where the thrill of romance comes in for this woman.
Yes,
it's that Byronic thing.
But it's that thing, except instead of a vampire, he's a beast. That is literally the only difference.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed, werewolves are the next big thing.
That's high concept. they don't even want werewolf stuff because of Jacob. Yeah. All they get is vampire and werewolf stuff. So it's zombies, actually. Zombies is...
Yeah.
Wow. That, you know, I was hoping that had run its course, too. Although The Walking Dead, the premiere episode of The Walking Dead is tonight. But there are so many, you know, being in the audiobook world on SFF Audio, I swear, for a long time, at least half the stuff we got in had a zombie in it.
Yeah.
I'd open these boxes and go, oh. Yeah, I've had my fill long, long time ago.
Yeah.
So I hope that that's run its course. But you're thinking that the YA is getting into that now? Yeah. Somebody fall in love with a zombie? Aren't there problems? Can't bring him home to your parents.
Well, you know, they tried to.
Well, that fell off. Here, let me put that in your pocket or something.
You know, I was listening to a book, and I can't remember the name of it, but the idea was that zombies could be semi-sentient in a way, and this one teenage zombie had eaten some boy's brain, and it turns out that boy was in love with this girl, so he felt moved to protect this girl. And I, as an audiobook, it really just didn't work very well because I wound up going, I'm sorry, this is just so disgusting. I can't listen to all this.
Wow. That reminds me of...
I just thought it was interesting that they were trying to humanize it in that way, you know?
Oh, that reminds me of Reapers Are the Angels, the first podcast we ever did. And I can't remember her name. Do you remember her name? But that's Temple. Kind of a YA heroine. Temple, that's her. Yeah. Tremendous book. Wonderful book. If you haven't read that book, I highly recommend it.
And the reason she's a woman of action, but she's a woman of action because she was born 15 years after the zombie apocalypse happened.
And she is very thoughtful. And
she has no family.
She is very thoughtful.
And she does a lot of self-examination and examination of motive. But while she's traveling through this background of zombies, which they're treated in such a way that they're almost just like having a bunch of wolves around.
Mm.
They're not really the focus. That makes sense. It's a fantastic book.
Well, look at this. There's a book called Exit Kingdom, Reapers Number 2. Yeah.
Alden Bell?
Yeah, by Alden Bell. I'm trying to find out if it's been released. It looks like
that's not his real name.
September 13th, 2012. It's out.
Okay. I don't want to give a lot away, but how can they do that? I just want to know.
It says, in a world where the undead outnumber the living, Moses Todd roams the post-apocalyptic plains of America.
Oh.
His reprobate brother, Abraham, his only companions, has known little else. Together they journey because they have to, because they have nowhere to go, and no one to answer other than themselves. So, yeah,
that's
clearly.
That's kind of Temple's thing, except Temple looked higher.
Right.
But yeah. Oh.
Interesting.
Mm.
Moses and Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and her name was Temple.
Yeah.
There's a reason it was our first podcast. I read it, was like, oh, the themes. We must speak about this. So
yep.
It's really a great book.
And that was the beginning.
Yep. And the audiobook is amazing.
It really is. Boy, I hope that that's I hope that that's an audio.
Yeah. Have you guys tested that thing, the WhisperNet sync between Audible and Amazon Kindle?
I have not. I've never used my Kindle for an audiobook.
I heard you talking about that, though, Heather.
How does it work?
Yeah.
Yes. you buy on Amazon, and if there is an audiobook version, it'll ping you and let you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get the audiobook version for, I don't know, $3 more.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And they talk to each other, so you leave off reading at night in bed on the Kindle. And the next day in the car, as you hit your commute, you turn on the Audible app, and it picks up where you left off Kindle. Right?
Wow.
Wow.
And it worked.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
The future is now, baby.
The future is now.
There you go, Scott.
I love it.
I knew that would be your thing.
All right.
Because that's your kind of life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
I know. I heard you talking about that, Heather, and I was like, that just makes sense.
I know. The technology finally caught up with what it should have been doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Reading us books the whole time somehow.
I tell you what.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Because I was in Dallas, and I had Dallas barbecue.
Not with me, though.
I know. Next time.
Oh, huh? Excellent.
Next time I'm staying closer to you.
Next time you're coming to my house for dinner, and I'm not saying, I'm taking no for an answer.
Deal.
Just excellent. Write that down somewhere.
I am. I'm putting it on a post-it and sticking it to my forehead.
There you go.
Oh, cool. Well, great. Well, thanks a lot, everybody. Really
thank
appreciate
you
being
great
here.
Fun.
Excellent.
Yeah, great
excellent.
Fun.
We should do something like this more often.
I know. If somebody else has a big topic.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Rose, get fired up about something.
Oh, don't worry. It's what we're working on. Yeah.
Don't encourage her. Please.
I love
That's
it.
Great. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And
yeah.
We will
do
another podcast in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.